would like to welcome everybody to Spotlight. We ask that you hold your questions till the end of the interview. No texting allowed in this room at all, so please do not text. And we have a very nice gentleman being interviewed today. So with that, I will turn it over to Mr. Steve Shepherd. He will be conducting the interview. So let's get going. Steve?
All right. Well, thanks, everyone, for coming to this edition of Spotlight. And we have a really special one today. We are talking to a gentleman that I've known for about a year and a half, I suppose, Dennis Scribner. How you doing, Dennis?
I'm doing fine, Steve. Good morning, afternoon, evening, wherever you may be, from Santa Barbara, and glad everybody is here to see what we can do this morning.
Okay, well, hey, Dennis, I just want to know every single thing about you that you're willing to share with us. So we have about an hour, so let's get going. Gracious. Dennis, you're, to me, a special friend of mine, one of my best friends, and I must say a person that I admire as much as I admire any of my friends, and that's not an exaggeration. I think y'all will find out why. Dennis is a winner. He's a winner. That's the one word I would use to describe Dennis. But he's also a kind gentleman with integrity. And so you'll see what I mean here. Dennis, tell us a little bit about your childhood or where you grew up, about your family. Just start us off with a little taste of how Dennis got started.
All righty, very good, Steve. Thanks a lot. My name is Dennis, and I live in Santa Barbara right now. I was born April of 1946 in the Los Angeles area. I think it was Maywood. And my mother and father were young, right, when they were married. They were 17 and 18, and I was born in 46, as I mentioned, and my sister was born in 48. So my parents were super young when they had us, and so they grew up and we grew up together, because we did everything from, you know, all sorts of activities, right, which I'll go into a little bit later. And basically, we lived in the Los Angeles area from Compton to Norwalk to La Mirada, Downey, and places of that era, I mean, location. And I went to public schools with the exception of 3 years. I went to kindergarten, first and part of second grade at public schools. And you know, I was born blind, but when I was about 4 or 5 years old, I had several operations, and I could see a fraction. I could see colors, so I know what major colors are, and I can imagine what some of these off name colors are, you know, the mixtures and things like that. So I had no problems with knowing what colors are when I was young. I used a coloring book, and you know, so I could remember that. In the second grade, I wasn't keeping up because I couldn't see the work, I guess, and they transferred me to what they call a day school for the blind, because I would travel in the morning to the school and then come back home at night, and that's where I learned Braille. And you know, so we went through that until the fifth grade. And I'll shoot it back to you, Steve, if you want to go over anything in that area of my life.
Okay, very good. Dennis, well, what was wrong with your eyes that they could do surgery and give you back some vision?
Well, you know, that's a good question, because when I was born, my mother had German measles, and she told me that the doctor gave her too much oxygen, and so, and I guess it, you know, burnt the octave nerve. But, I had 13 operations, and I guess one of them restored my right eye just a fraction, somehow. So I could see, a little bit, not much, very, very little, but enough to see colors and things. And then it went away, and, after that, I guess they couldn't do anything. So with the combination of the German measles and oxygen and things like that, so somehow it, it burnt the nerve.
Okay. Yeah, I know a lot of people have conditions like that. In fact, Hallie is one of them. Dennis, I know one of your sisters, so very lovely lady. How did y'all get along as kids?
Oh, basically we got along fairly well. We did all kinds of things together, and we didn't fight too much. I guess we did a little bit, but, not much. I used to did all kinds of things with me. She could see, of course, and she's on the side. That's Sharon. And we would get into a little bit of trouble once in a while. Like one time at the end of the street, they were building new houses down the block. And I guess I was four or five, and she was three. And we decided to go down there and go through the partially built homes, They were like frames, and they had the big ditches there for the pipes and stuff. And we would go along and, follow the ditches inside there. They were maybe 3 feet deep or 2.5 feet, not real deep, but we'd get in there and walk around. And, of course, we got in trouble for that because my parents were sleeping. We just snuck out one morning and did that. And, other things that we had what they call a doughboy pool in the backyard. It was, I think it was 18 feet in circumference around, and it's like 3.5 feet deep. And we used to have good times during the summer from 1950 to 54. I guess we got it in 53 or 4. And that was one of the first pools in that area. We'd have everybody wanting to come over and, play in the water and all that sort of stuff. But we got along good. Our whole family got along real well. During that
time. Okay, well, that's good. So let's talk more about your schooling. What kind of student were you, Dennis? Did you like school? Did you do well in school? You said you had some problems in the second grade. What was it like being uprooted and going to a blind school?
Well, it was okay. In kindergarten, first and second grade, I got along with the kids and stuff like that. But I guess the teachers probably felt that I didn't see well enough to, do the reading and things. So they transferred me to a school called Francis Blend, which is, it was a small school at the time. I guess it's still going. I don't know. I haven't kept up with it, but I understand it's probably still down there. So I transferred into the second grade there. I probably took the second grade over now that I think about it. And I, learned Braille fairly quickly. Had no problems in school. Got along with all the kids. And we used to, play in the yard, special ball games that have. And then I learned Braille fairly rapidly. And it worked very well. And I stayed there until the fifth grade, I believe it was. And then I went back to public schools from the sixth grade all the way to the 12th grade. And so I was never around that many blind kids except for those 2 or 3 years. And that was just during the day. But, at home, I didn't know anybody. And so I didn't think about it. So I thought, just the way it is. So I didn't really know that many other blind kids, except when I joined a group called the Foundation for the Junior Blind. And I think I joined them in 57, where they had special things that they'd like to do. They had a camp in Malibu, which is outside of Los Angeles. And it was a nice camp for the blind. It was a two-week thing. And so I met some of the kids that I used to go to school with there. And so we stayed in touch a little bit, you know, during that time. And so they had, you know, weekends where they would take us to different events, like the Greek Theater or the Hollywood Bowl or Disneyland or, you know, just up in the mountains in the snow and, you know, just a Saturday thing. And then when you got older, it was Friday night dances and things of that nature.
Okay. So it sounds like you started your school and had a fairly difficult time. And then in your case, going to a blind school was a positive experience, apparently, because you thrived and you learned Braille and no more getting set back. And you did pretty well, it seems. What was it like going back to a public school after being in a day school for the blind?
I had no problems, actually, because back then they had, they call it resource rooms, I guess it was, where they had special education teachers that, you know, worked in that field. So they kept up with the Braille books. You know, so we had reading and things like that in the sixth grade, I remember especially. Then when I went to high school, well, I guess this, the first school went from kindergarten to sixth grade. And then I guess then they switched it. When I went in seventh grade, they went from sixth to seventh and eighth grade for junior high. But anyway, in the seventh grade, I went back to a public school again and was in regular classes, but I did have a homeroom or a special resource room that I could go to and talk to the teacher about homework, and she could help me, you know, or he, whoever it was, depending on the year, could help with special things that need to be caught up with reading. You know, they have readers, and then, of course, talking books or books on tape from other reading sources at the time, or you can get a reader to read to you. And so that worked out fine. Sometimes special tests where the regular teacher in the regular classes couldn't or didn't have time to read the test to me, I'd go there and have that teacher read the test, and I'd take it through on a typewriter or, you know, whatever form that they wanted, orally or whatever. So I did it that way, and it worked out real well, no problems. And it wasn't a real crowded, you know, homeroom. We maybe had two or three, four other partially sighted kids. I guess I was the first one in the Whittier area at the time, and so sort of blazed the way through the school system, even through high school. I was the first one that was totally blind in the resource room there. And so we had to, you know, see how things worked all the way up in, you know, to the 12th grade.
Yeah, okay. The old trailblazer thing, a lot of us are familiar with that, I'm sure. So when you graduated high school, well, let me ask you this, Dennis. You are a talented piano player. And piano actually became the focus of your career. When did you start learning piano?
Well, my parents bought me my first piano. I think it was when we were living in La Mirada at the time, which is 15, 18 miles east of Los Angeles. And that was in 1956. I guess it was 1956. They bought me a spinet. Just to play around on and stuff. And I started, you know, goofing around with it and played by ear. And I took maybe 6 months or a year of lessons with a gentleman that taught blind kids how to play. And so, you know, I learned that way, and then we parted ways. I don't know why. Either he retired or, anyway, I didn't continue with him. I've just been playing by ear ever since. He gave me the foundation, although he started me out on songs. I never did learn, you know, scales and things like that. I figured them out later. But he taught me, modern songs at a time, just the melody, and then throw the simple, left-hand chords in it. And I went from there. And that's how I started with piano. You know, and of course, at that time, I didn't know anything about the piano. And I wasn't even home when it was first tuned the first time, so I didn't even get to see that.
Hey, Dennis, what was a modern tune in 1956 that you learned on piano?
Well, I remember a couple of them. Tammy, that Debbie Reynolds sang. Love Letters in the Sand, maybe that was 57, right in that area, by Pat Boone. I don't know, there was a few other ones. Fascination, Tenderly, things of the, that modern stuff. It was not classical, because I don't think he taught classical. And so I never did learn any classical pieces. And, of course, that probably hurt my theory in music. But, I just did it by ear. So I picked up the modern tunes that I heard at the time.
Okay. That's funny. It was just sort of an aside question. Interesting, because you've been playing, I suppose, now for 50 years, and I just wanted to know what was modern when you started. That's good. Okay, well, when you graduated high school, what did you do next? How did you decide on what to do next? What was going through your mind? How did all that go?
Well, I went through Sierra High School in Whittier from 9th grade to 12th grade. And during that time, there was a couple of other major things that happened. I may as well throw that in and, go that route. One of them was I got a guide dog, my first guide dog. Well, my only guide dog. And that was the summer of 1962. And it was a school... in a guide dog school in North Hollywood. I think it's called International Guiding Eye. And I went there for a month, and I stayed there Monday through Friday and went home on weekends because it wasn't that far. The first couple of days, we did the normal, testing and your balance and how you get around and all this sort of stuff. And of course, I had no problems getting around. Everybody says get around a little bit better than normal people or even kids do. I had another guy with me and he didn't make it. So I was the only one there. And then the owner asked me if I knew anybody that wanted one, so I wouldn't have to be just by myself at the place. And I said, sure. I had a friend named David at the time, David Sarber, who was in high school with me. He just became blinded. And we were good friends. And so I got him in there, and, we had a good time. We were buddies, and we used to have guide dog races and all kinds of crazy things. We'd get into all kinds of mischief. And so that was 1 month in 1961 that I think about it, because something else happened in 62 that I have to mention. So I think it was 1961. When I got my guide dog, that's right. So, and her name was Duchess, and she was a black shepherd, German shepherd.
Okay. And, what else during high school was, significant that you wanted to bring up, Dennis?
Yeah, the other thing, and that was in the summer of 1962, this organization I belonged to was called, Foundation for the Junior Blind. And they decided to take 24 blind kids around the United States. And I was lucky, fortunate to be one of them, one of the 12 boys, and we had the 12 girls, six counselors, the bus driver, and Nadia Kaplan, which was the director's wife, who was Norm Kaplan at the time. And we took a trip starting in, I guess it was middle of June, and then get back to almost September. It was like 10 weeks. We covered 33 states. We were on a bus. 33 states, went to a lot of the tourist highlights of each state, you know, from Arizona and New Mexico and Colorado and all across Texas and not too much into the south, except maybe a little bit to West Virginia, things like that. And then, of course, all of the northern part of the country, New York and Washington, D.C., in Washington, we met President Kennedy at the in the Rose Garden there, and so we talked to him for probably half hour, whatever it was. It was it was something that was one of the highlights of the trip. There was a lot of other things. It was all sponsored by the Lions Club of the country. Different chapters would host one or two of the kids in either their homes, or hotel rooms, or YMCAs, or something of that nature, and they would, you know, provide us meals and entertainment, and we would entertain them, you know. We had group songs, a lot of us played the piano for them, and things of that nature, so it was a great trip. We had such a good time, went to Coney Island, went to Canada, you know, Niagara Falls, just, so many points of interest for each state. It was really great.
Oh yeah, Dennis, you told me about that last night with President Kennedy, and it slipped my mind where that came in the chronology of things, so I'm glad you brought that one up. Boy, that's cool. What was that like, talking to President Kennedy?
Oh, it was neat. He shook each of our hands, you know, and it was fairly quick. He gave a little speech, you know. Shoot, I wish I had. At the time, we, you know, tape recorders were just starting to become portableized, and and I didn't have one with me, and I wish I had them because it'd have been neat to record them. He, just welcomed us and said that we were pioneers, and the blind area. And the foundation was doing a wonderful job, you know, taking us throughout the country, meeting people and things like that. And it was fun. We got to see the White House a little bit and, of course, the United Building. And we stayed in New York, I think, as well for like 5 days. Went to the Statue of Liberty and Coney Island and a few of the other things I can't remember right now. But points of interest in New York, and it was 42nd Street. It was fun.
Okay, sounds like a great trip. Now things start getting really good, too, and just go pretty much up from here. What happened after high school?
Well, after high school, of course, during high school and all that sort of stuff, my parents and my sister and I, every weekend we'd go somewhere, either camping with our motorcycles or our dune buggies or go-karts or something. And, we'd always go riding through the hills and dirt trails of Southern California. And so we put a lot of miles on motorcycles. I would ride behind my dad. We had a little larger Honda. It belonged to the Honda Club. And so we would, ride these deserted trails and go into neat mountain passes and valleys and, rivers and things like that. And, of course, they had their boat. He used to race small boats, like 14-foot boats with outboard motors. And we had a little place on the Colorado River where we'd go, swimming and water skiing and all that sort of stuff. And, of course, water skiing was lots and lots of fun. I always enjoyed it. I could double water ski easy. No problems at all. Even if it's a little choppy, because you can always rebalance yourself with the other ski. sing a little harder. I can do it with smooth, because you can't, you know, when a wave comes, you can't, you know, you don't know which way the next one's coming from when you can't see it. So slalom was a little bit harder for me, but I did stay up for a while, especially with smooth. Yeah, it was no problem there, but when it gets choppy, it was a little harder. And then, of course, you know, crazy things I used to do is dive off of bridges, you know, over the river. You know, highest one I dove off of was 70 foot. And let me tell you, first time I jumped, just because I wanted to see how far it was, and I couldn't believe how far, while you're falling, you know, before you hit the water, where you know, it was like 5 seconds, or it seemed longer, but I'm sure it wasn't. And, you know, it was just surprising the distance. And so the second time I dove, and that was the last time I dove, because, you know, if you're over too far, if you're not sharp enough into the water, you know, you can hurt yourself. So I didn't dive too much more. I jumped mainly off of things like that, because I didn't want to get hurt or anything.
Wow, boy, I dove off of a 3-meter board, never tried 70 feet. Dennis was a daredevil, and I don't think that part of him has changed any. okay, so let's come up to your education after high school. What happened? What did you decide on with education?
Yeah, okay. After that, we'll get into driving and stuff a little bit later, because that was another wild part of growing up, you know, with sand buggies and stuff. After high school, I went to a junior college, Rio Hondo Junior College, which was in Santa Fe Springs, edge of Whittier. And I took some courses there, you know, like English and music and things like that. And I went 2 years, and I did fair. I wasn't a super student. I got A's and B's and a couple of C's and things like that. And so I didn't know what I was going to do. I go, this is crazy. You know, I don't know what this is going to do. I had a counselor. Vocation counselor, which I didn't know very well, and I didn't talk to him that often. So I called him, and I made an appointment to go see him, and we started talking. And he said, what do you want to do? And I go, I don't know. You know, I had no idea at the time. If I could see, I'd probably go in the same field my father was in, you know, brewmaster at a brewing company. I'd probably done that, but of course I couldn't do that. I didn't think so. We just carried on a little bit and took some tests, and they knew I liked pianos, and they said, well, how about piano tuning? I go, oh, yeah, sounds cool, you know. I probably could maybe try it out and see if I would do good in it. So that's what I ended up finally doing is going to the, at the time it was called Piano Hospital and Training Center, and that's how I know it as, where you learn piano tuning, rebuilding, everything but refinishing, although they had a refinishing booth there, but we didn't do that. We did everything else. And so that's how I started in piano tuning business that I'm in today. And that started in September of 1967.
Oh, okay. Okay, so now you're 20 years old and the beginnings of the vocation. Did you start the business, your business then? Or was there more in between, or is that how you started, Dennis?
Well, I started in September of 67, went through the course. It was a 20-month course. We stayed in private homes, a room and board, and all that sort of stuff. The state paid for it. So, and of course, state of California paid probably the most of all the states, you know, because they gave me what is it called? SSI, I guess it was called. And so I always had money, you know, because I had a little more money than a lot of people did at the time from other states. Anyway, they, you know, I guess you're on a trial basis for 3 months to see how well you do, if you continue or not. So I guess I did okay because they kept me. He said, you have no problem. So I went through, you know, the first year, and then during the summer we were off, so we went back home and, of course, went out to the deserts and goofed around with the sand buggies and stuff. Then the next year went back in September of 68, graduated in 69, June of 69, and had a good time there, too. We had, it was 12 students, 7 in our class, my class that graduated. Is that right? Yeah, I think so. It's been so long now. And so I was back with some blind people again, and a couple I knew from school, believe it or not, from my junior, my elementary schooling. And they were a couple of years behind me, but we got to be good friends. And he's still in the Los Angeles area working out of Paramount, which is a little east of Los Angeles. Anyway, so we you know, went through the whole everything, you know, rebuilding, tuning, and the little bit of the business aspect. I did that on my own, actually, the business stuff. And then at graduation, you know, we had the ceremony and all that sort of stuff. And right before it, they would find a job for you a lot of times, you know, if you wanted it. And they happened to find one in Fairfield, Connecticut, you know, just on the Long Island Sound near, actually it was in Westport. I was rooming with a landlady, a nice lady in Fairfield. And so I worked for this Baldwin dealer for a year. And come to find out, at the end of the year, they wanted to move to Florida. And I said, I'm going to go back to California. So, you know, I lived in Connecticut for a year, went through their winters and their summer and all that sort of stuff. And I go, I didn't know that many people there, you know. And I had my ham license, but there wasn't that many, you know, much portable HTs and stuff, so I didn't really, you know, have too much to do. I had a tape recorder and I had a radio and, you know, I did that. But I didn't know that many people. So instead of going to Florida, I went back to California. And that was the first year after the Piano Hospital and Training Center, of course.
Okay. And when you went back to California, was it hard to get a job?
I went back to California, stayed with my parents for 2 weeks. There was a job offering. I guess the Piano Hospital heard about it, and they called me and asked me if I wanted it. And I said, well, yeah, okay, I'll go and see and talk to them. And that was up here in Santa Barbara. It was called Bennett Music Company, and they dealt in Steinways and Yamahas and, you know, nice high-end pianos. So I came up here and interviewed with the owner and one of the top salesmen and stuff and got the job. And then I moved up here. They found me in an apartment, actually real close to the store. It was just across a parking lot type thing, so I could walk back and forth to work every day. And it worked out good. I stayed with them for 5 years. 5 years doing all the store tunings, outside tunings, rebuilding, and everything. And, yeah, you know, as stores go, they were okay. I wouldn't work for a store now, but, you know, they like to be bossy and all this nonsense, you know. They didn't pay you very well. And so after 5 years, I decided to go on my own. And, of course, they got all upset, and they said, we're going to have to help you because you're not going to make it. No, I said, you want to bet? I did better than they did, but that's beside the point. And, yeah, but it was a good learning experience, you know. Because I've seen how they ran their store and how they treated customers and things like that. And I just kept little records of customers that I thought I would use after I left the store. And I may use a couple, but actually I did better, you know, without looking at the little book that I had that I saved some names with. And so I worked for them for 5 years, tuning and, you know, doing all their concert tunings and, you know, for the Grateful Dead and for Peter Nero and Vicky Carr and Wayne Newton and Andy Williams, all the, you know, George Shearing and all the rest of them. So I did a lot of that for the first 5 years.
Yeah, and I think you still do a lot of concert tuning, don't you, Dennis? Now, at some point, you met a young lady who is still a young lady, even though you're not a young man, Joanne. Was that during this time, Dennis?
Oh, yes, it was. You better believe it's the best thing that ever happened to me. And I moved up there in June of 1970. I met Joanne on the phone by calling the wrong number accidentally in July. I don't know who I was calling, but we, you know, started talking and just carried on since then. And so I got her number. I don't know how I misdialed, but anyway, I did, which was great. Worked up super, super well. Best thing ever happened to me, by golly. And let's see, so we just talked, and she sent a couple of her friends over to meet me before she did. And I guess they told her that I was okay, you know, come and meet and all that sort of stuff. And we did. Had our first date on a Wednesday and went to A&W, which is a hamburger chain in the United States. I don't know if it's all over the country, but at least in California it is. I'm sure it's other places as well. We had our first date, you know, during my lunch hour, and of course she could drive, and so we went for lunch for an hour, and talked to her every day since. By golly, we were engaged in September and got married in December, 36 years ago now.
Now wait a minute, you mean that you met Joanne by dialing a wrong number?
Yep, indeedy. I don't know who I was calling or why, but she had a nice voice, and we just started talking all of a sudden. Of course, I always kid her by saying, boy, did I get a wrong number? But of course I didn't. But she told me not to say that, but I had to, because I always do it. And so we dated, you know, all that time through the half year. And her mother sent her away on a bus to San Francisco to her grandmother's to see if we would knock off this craziness, because I guess they didn't want her to marry a blind person. You know, how could I afford to take care of her and all that sort of stuff? But, you know, she came back and we still got together, so not much they could do about it. So it was fun. From July to, and then until we went to Las Vegas and got married on December
12th. Oh, a Vegas wedding, okay. I just have to ask this. Do you know what the number you were trying to dial was, and did you ever connect?
You know, I'm trying to remember that. I don't know if it was a tuning I was, or if it was somebody with a piano or something, and I don't know. But the funny thing is how Joanne told her mother how we met. She said that we met she met me in college. She was going to college at that time in an art class. I don't know why she picked art, because she said that he, you know, painted, had rubber bands around the different colors of paint, or I don't know. You have to ask her. It was like, whoa, that's different. I wouldn't dream of, you know, doing painting of any of that type. So so that was, so I don't know if mother believed her or not, but I got to know her mother real well. Matter of fact, I talked to her mother a lot more sometimes than I did Joanne on the phone. She would carry on, you know, for a while, and we were talking quite often. So it worked out well. And of course, our sister and a lot of people didn't give us 6 months, you know, but we proved them wrong.
Boy, that's for sure. So you said that some of them didn't approve of you marrying because you were a blind, but her mother and you got along well?
Yeah, we did, actually. We got along pretty good. I don't know. I don't know if she didn't want her to marry me. They probably were hesitant, you know. Wanted somebody better with a better job, or, you know, could take care of her easier, or something. I don't know what happened. But I didn't, there really wasn't any problems with them. We get along real well. After we married, her father drove me, after I left the Bennett Music Company, he drove me for, oh, I don't know, 10 years or longer. I can't remember. I have to figure it out. And so we got along real well after that. It was, you know, just the first hesitation of marrying somebody blind. Her doctor was against it, and her sister, and I don't know who else was. I think a few other people, but I don't remember.
Yeah, okay. Now, Dennis, when did you start the piano selling business end of your vocation? Obviously, you had to wait till you were working for yourself, I'm assuming.
Well, you're right. Yeah, that's for sure. Because we were living in an apartment at the time, and we lived there it was like a bachelor's apartment, so it was small, you know, just one big room, little kitchen, little dining area, real tiny, in the bathroom, and one of these sort of semi-walk-in closet things. And it was tiny, so... while I was working there, I was tuning for a lot of different people, and one lady was just getting her real estate license. I was tuning her piano, and I said, well, if you find something on what they call the Mesa, it's a little hill between the freeway and the ocean, so I can have my antenna, my ham radio antenna. I was a ham at that time, of course, back in 62. I got my license. But, you know, I would think about it. And by golly, she found, you know, a few places, and she sold us her first sale, and we bought our first house, which is the same one we're in today, up here on the Mesa. So just by tuning her piano, and I told her to find something, and she did. So we've had this home since April of 1973.
Huh. Okay, so... what is it? Once you had a house, then you started tuning and selling pianos on your own?
Probably a couple years later, because I was still working for Bennett's, and I left them in, I guess it was January of 75 or 76. I think it was 76, now that I think about it. And I started my own business. On my own, where I'd go to my own customers and things like that. And I did that for a few years. And then I started taking older pianos in and doing major rebuilding on grands and uprights and things like that. And then I started selling them that way, lightly. Not as much as I've done since I remodeled my garage into a showroom where I sell lots of good used pianos. Back then, I would rebuild them and sell them. Now I don't rebuild as much. I've gotten out of that. I still do a lot of tuning, light repair, major rebuilding. I farm out, let the people, this other company in L.A. do the major work, and I collect the money. So it's a little easier and faster and things like that. So basically around 76, 77, I started selling, and when I redid the home garage into a showroom, maybe back about 2000. Let's see, we did our living room in 2003. Yeah, probably about 2001, I started really going into selling pianos as well.
Oh, okay, so it hadn't been that long that you had your showroom. Is that the major part of your business now? Does tuning kind of keep your name out there and help your selling, or does your selling help your tuning, or would you really need to still tune? I'm just being curious from a business standpoint now.
Oh, yeah, I need to tune. Because I can sell, and that's fine, but I need to keep up the tuning, because I get to see a lot of piano teachers, customers that need to be upgraded if they want, you know, good used pianos. I have that to fall back on. The tuning is the mainstay that keeps the money flowing in. When I do sell a piano, that's a little extra. I can put it away. We can go on trips or, you know, buy whatever we want and things like that with that. Or I can invest in better pianos and then, you know, just build it up that way. I sold, from 1976, 78, just lightly, you know, whenever I get something finished. And, you know, the piano business was flourishing then. I could sell old uprights for a lot of money. Now I don't take old junky uprights that people want to give me because I have no place to put them and I can't move them. So now I sell the higher end used pianos and it works out real well. So, you know, last year and the year before I did very well in selling. Slowing down just a fraction, but it's, you know, it comes and goes and ebbs and flows and all that sort of stuff. So I need to keep tuning and just to have a paycheck come in, you know, and keep the bills going and stuff like that. But when I do sell a piano, then I can, you know, add a little more to, we enlarged our living room. So we borrowed a little bit on our house, home equity loan, and I want to pay that off. So we're working on that. But other than that, you know, it's just been fine. We're, you know, taking it easy. Joanne only works 3 days a week now. She drives me in the mornings and sometimes Wednesday and Thursday afternoons if we need something special, somebody needs done, we'll do that. And she works for a doctor from 1:30 to 5 or 5:30, whatever, on Monday, Tuesdays, and Fridays. So that way, if somebody needs the tuning then, they pick me up or I'm on the Internet on FTP or on, you know, doing something out in the showroom or playing on the computer or something.
I see. So selling pianos is sort of a luxury item. So I imagine it's somewhat cyclical that would sort of go along with the economy. Dennis, are you an economic indicator? Can I gauge the economy with your business?
You might be able to. It's really weird because sometimes, you know, you'd think Christmas would be a good time to sell pianos, and usually it is. This Christmas was a little bit down. I sold a couple of pianos. And then sometimes you think January would be slow, and I've sold up to 5 pianos in January. So you just don't know. You know, it just depends on what people are looking for and the economy at the time and how the teachers, you know, talk to their students about what kind of piano they have or if they have a piano. Some just have keyboards. And so I've got to know a few teachers. And since I'm the only store in town, if you can believe that, when I first came to Santa Barbara, there were 10 piano stores. Now there are 0 except for me. And I do it on my home. And I guess it's just, you know, the rent and stuff is so expensive here. And if you don't sell enough, you know, they're just not going to make it. So that's why I never wanted to expand. I didn't want to have to mess with city nonsense and you know, doing, building, renting a building and paying all those fees. And, oh, it's a drag. So I do it on my home. Plus, I don't have to worry about getting there to the store and staying there, even if there's nothing happening, because I can make an appointment here, and they drive up and look at the pianos, and if they like it, you know, they buy it or they go somewhere else. So it just, best of both worlds, you know, when I do it out of my home.
Yeah, but it helps a lot when there's nowhere else to go. I guess they could go to eBay. But if they want to test drive the piano, they got to come to you. That's pretty sweet. Dennis, how did you get into computers? When? And, you know, bring us a little up to date on that. I want to come up to date and get into how you found FTP in a few minutes. We're getting sort of close to the end of the hour. But Dennis is a great contributor to FTP. If you want, if there's a presentation to be recorded, Dennis is there, one of the recorders. He does the high-tech, low-tech, and he's just a friend to anyone who needs one, and is a big contributor to FTP. Dennis, how did you start computers? And just bring us a little bit up on that, and then how did you find FTP?
Oh, you bet. Yeah, HTLT tomorrow. I got a good podcast on the Consumer Electronics Show for 2007, so you're all more than welcome to come and take a listen to that. Well, I've always been interested in electronics. I've been a ham since 1963, March of 63. And so I've always been interested in radio, always tape recorders, you know, anything that had an idea of being computing or whatever. I got my first computer that actually I could use. I got a Sinclair 1000, which I couldn't use. It's one of those first little things that you have to use a stylus, and it didn't talk, it didn't do anything that I could do. You know, you'd have to hook it up to a monitor, and it was just a little tiny thing. Didn't even have, I don't think, had even 16 megs on it, or even 8 megs. And it was, you know, it was, I still have it, it's brand new in the box. My first one was Atari. I got the Atari 800, and of course it didn't talk much, it didn't do anything. Until I bought a little device called Voltrax. I used to call it Voltar because he had a funny voice. Voltrax was interesting. It was the first talking computer that I got. Once you got figured out how to get it to talk, that was fine. You couldn't shut the thing up. It'd just keep going until it ran out of information. And so that was a pain. I mean, you know, worked on that. Or we could stop it at different points. Get the information into the computer, you had to type everything. Then I finally got a tape drive, and I wanted to do a database for my customers. So a tape drive, after we typed everything in, you'd save it to the tape drive, and then you can reload it. Took a long time to, you know, each customer you'd hear go along, and it sounded like it'd be like 45 baud or 90 baud, I don't know. It was slow. And it would count up, you know, and if you had quite a few customers' name in there, it'd take a while just to load it. I go, this is crazy. But that's all it was then. Next thing, let's see, I upgraded that to, you know, a couple of disk drives. I had a high-end 800 where you could play games and things of that sort, and that was about it. And it worked out good, and I had fun with it. Next thing, we went to it's called TRW. It's a ham radio swap meet in Los Angeles. It's in Torrance or Inglewood, wherever it was down there. Inglewood, I think. And it's for amateur radio and things like that. And the computers are just starting to come in. So somebody had a booth with XTs, you know. So I got one of them. It was a slow guy, and got Voltrax on it, and it didn't work. And then all of a sudden, Telesensory Systems Incorporated came out with Vert Plus. And I got that thing. It was expensive. It was like $3,000, but it worked great. It was like JAWS is today, but for DOS. And you could do anything with it once you learned the line commands. And Chuck and I, he finally got one after about a year and a half or so after I got mine. I talked him into it, so he got his. And we played with those things for, years and years and years. 1988, I think, is when I first got mine. He got his in 89 or 90. And so we kept learning and learning, and, you know, had it set up real well. And everything worked super. And we got online, and we were on bulletin boards and played a lot of these games, you know, mud games and trade wars and all that sort of stuff. So we did that. And then the Internet came along. And I got on the Internet in 1992. I still with the same people, although I'm with two of them now. I have rain.org and west.net. And so I was on the Internet since 92. And at that time we used the FTP client where you'd go and search for things and, you know, Gopher and all that sort of stuff. FTP didn't stand for the people. It was, you know, a file transfer protocol. And, so I was with that all the way up to about 2000 and, oh, what was it? When did I get on FTP? Let's see, 2007, 6, 5, probably 2004 or 5. And, by that time, Chuck, at his work, made him switch over to Windows, and he got jaws. He says, you gotta come over. I go, nah, I'm not gonna go to, cause he let me borrow a 3.0 or something of jaws for my Windows machine. And the thing wouldn't talk, it wouldn't do anything. Bert was way above it at the time. So I said, nah, forget it. I'm not interested. It's not doing anything. So the next major thing is the piano hospital got a room here on FTP for piano tuning. And they wanted me to join it. Oh, okay. So I didn't have, it wouldn't, jaws wouldn't talk. I mean, DOS, my Bert wouldn't talk to me. So I couldn't get on with that. So I had to use my Windows machine. And I had a friend set it up, put the password in, and the password for the room, and all that sort of stuff. And I still today don't know how I did it. But I got on, and I counted the tab overs and the arrow downs. I counted all this stuff, and I landed in the room, and I got in there. Once I got in there and then started talking to the people, I heard them say hi to whoever was coming in the room, because I couldn't hear it at the time. I started talking to him. I said, how do you know who's coming in the room? And they told me that they were using JAWS. And I thought, I tried JAWS and it didn't work. He says, try the later ones. It's a lot better. So I said, okay. So I broke down, bought JAWS 6, put it in, and oh boy. After that, never looked back.
All right. But that's pretty amazing. You first got on for the people. You didn't even have JAWS. Or any screen reader, you were totally blind, as it were. And I think that's pretty neat.
Yeah, that's right. I go, this is nuts. Why do I have to count over? And the thing wouldn't talk to me, you know. But when I heard about JAWS, and they said what you could do with it, and I go, yeah, okay. So, you know, it's hard to break, to buy JAWS and take a chance. But everybody said it worked good. And those people in that room still aren't up to what they can do with it, you know. It was just, you know, they're just beginning. Even today, a lot of the piano guys are, you know, a little bit behind using the full capabilities of JAWS. And, of course, I didn't know it at the time, but because they were way ahead of me at that time. So once I got JAWS and started looking around, and I didn't know Windows, I didn't know JAWS, I didn't know Excel, I didn't know Word, because I was using WordPerfect, I didn't know anything. And so I had a quick learning curve to catch up with everything. And it took me a little while, but slowly sneaking up and almost getting up here now.
Yeah, it's amazing how much you have come up to speed. You know, a lot of us, you said that people in the piano room, don't use the capabilities. A lot of us are like that, but it's also amazing how much they and everyone who comes on for the people does come up to speed just by, you know, being around other JAWS users or Windows users or whatever, and learning just through this venue here. That's one of the greatest benefits of this community, I think. And you and Chuck and all the guys in the piano room, they're, you know, such good examples of that. And how do you use JAWS now, or how do you use computers now? You said you use Word and you use Excel. Do you use Excel as a tool for your business?
I certainly do. I had everything on DOS, and I've transferred everything over to Excel now, except for one of my databases on Talking Books. I saved all the books and the authors and readers and stuff since 1958, and I haven't transferred that over, so it's still on my DOS machine. But everything else is in JAWS. Oh yeah, if it wasn't for this site, you know, I'll tell you, you and John Harris and you know, and even Stickboy and all the rest, you know, I just listen to tech, you know, the tech team room, and even if I don't have the problem, go in there and just listen to it, because it may come up, and that's how you learn. And so, you know, I want to thank Jennifer and the FTP site and all the tech people and stuff, because, boy, it made a difference when you can ask somebody, do you know how to do such and such? Because, you know, I'm trying to figure this out. And boom, you get an answer right away, and it makes a world of difference in learning. You know, if you had to do it all by yourself, you could do it, but, boy, it's so much nicer when you have somebody else have already done it, and you don't have to do that exploring and testing and trial and error and all that stuff.
Yeah, okay. Dennis, as I said, you are a great contributor to the FTP community. You record any event that you're asked to record, if at all possible. You run high-tech, low-tech. You do just pretty much whatever you're asked, and I do want to acknowledge that and let you talk about that a little bit. We're pretty much at the end, and I do want to open it up for questions. Dennis is a guy with lots of knowledge and lots of wisdom to share, and he's willing to share it. So I do want to open the room up for questions in a minute. Oh, you know what? I want to showcase your piano playing ability before we bring it to an end, Dennis. If that's okay with you, we happen to have a song played by you in MP3 format, Hallie has. Would you mind, is it okay if I have Hallie play the song?
Oh, sure, yeah, no problem at all. Yeah, I like playing piano, and I just threw it together real quick just to, you know, to show that I can play a little bit, and I need to practice more, but you bet, no problem at all. It's always fun to have it displayed here.
Okay, I'm going to give it over to Hallie for a minute, and then we're going to play that song, and then I'd like to open up the floor for questions. If anyone has any questions that I forgot to ask, are you ready, Miss Hallie? If you are, go ahead.
Send check or money order to the address on your screen.
applause. Dennis, that piano sounded quite well tuned to me. Did you tune that piano?
Yeah, I did. It's a it was a Steinway M that I just sold, so it's gone. I have another one in its place, but yeah, I did tune it. It you know, through FTP, it did sound pretty good. Of course, with the regular MP3 version, it probably sounded real good over your speakers locally.
All right, and guess what? Misty is my favorite song in the world if I had to choose one. I just love that song, and that was a great rendition. Thank you very, very much, Dennis. You're an accomplished piano player as well as businessman, piano tuner, friend, member of FTP. I want to thank you for being with us today, first of all. And second, I'd like to open the floor to questions to our listeners here in the room. Dennis, thanks again, my friend. I appreciate it. And I'm going to open it up to the floor now. Any questions for Dennis?
Dennis, I got one question. When you were doing your tour of the 33 states that you did when you were in high school, any chance by at all that you happened to hit Montana?
I'm trying to remember. I don't think we made it to Montana, although Joanne and I did back in the maybe in the 80s sometime. We went to a piano technicians guild in Oregon, and that was 1 week. And then we rented a car, and we drove through Washington, Idaho, and into Montana. Went up to the great Glacier Park system and drove a little bit through there. And while we were there, we saw a big sign said Ham Radio Convention. So we stopped in, and all these people that were from all over the country, and a lot from California, and the amateur radios were having a get-together. So we talked with them for, you know, part of the day, and then we went on into, was it Browning? Brody? No, the Brody's in California. And you probably know where it is, just outside of Glacier Park. And so I did like Big Sky Country. It was neat up there, and a nice and a beautiful place. And that was one place on the way back in Montana. They had a place Joanne saw, and it was a maze where you could go in and go into this cornfield. I guess it was cornfield, but I think it was made out of a wood or something. And you had to go through this maze and get all the different corners, markers. So we did that, and we did it under an hour. So we were having a good time. That was a lot of fun.
Any other questions for Dennis?
No questions, but I just wanted to echo Steve's thanks, Dennis, not only for co-hosting High Tech Low Tech with Tommy and for the recording you do for us, but the attitude you always bring to the task you accept. You do it with enthusiasm, and you're very gracious about it, and that's always so much appreciated, probably more than you know. So take this opportunity to say thank you, Dennis, for all you do for FTP.
Well, thank you there, Jennifer. Well, thank you and everybody on FTP and for the site. Because, boy, it really makes a difference, you know. Of course, it's my homepage, you know. It used to be Google before I knew the site, but, of course, now it's the homepage. And it's a super site. I enjoy, you know, everybody on the site, all the neat things that, you know, the music rooms, and, of course, the golf rooms and the tournaments and everything else, High Tech, Low Tech. Everybody come in tomorrow at 3 Eastern, and I think you'll enjoy this podcast. That's new stuff from Las Vegas, the Consumer Electronics Show, and it's going to be a nice podcast. It's about 25 minutes long, done by Michael May, who does an excellent job on reporting the new gadgets for the blind. And I want to thank you, Jennifer, and everyone else. It's been super, and we're going to keep the site going forever.
Yeah, this is Wes here in Portland, Oregon, and That was a great interview. I really enjoyed it, and I enjoyed the piano playing, and you mentioned you were a ham, Dennis. So am I. My call's AC7DZ, and I guess this isn't the place to discuss it, but I think it's interesting what the FCC has decided to do regarding the Morse code, the dropping of the code. And sometime it'd be interesting to go down into the shack there and discuss it down there. And, cause I know there are quite a few of us hams around on FTP. And, but anyway, your interview was very, very interesting. And have you ever been to the Piano Hospital in Vancouver, Washington?
Dennis, this is Donna Marie. I just wanted to let you know, and Joanne, what a pleasure it's been knowing you guys and meeting you, and I'm not free to meet you in person, too.
Oh, same here, Donna. You too. And, Wes, yes, that's where I took my training, was at the Piano Hospital and Training Center there on Evergreen Boulevard in Vancouver, Washington. And we talked about 3-4 nights ago. My call is WB6 Oscar Bravo Bravo. And we talked with your friend JXJ, was it? Yeah. And so we welcomed you to the site. And you betcha, it was nice to have you here this afternoon, morning. And many neat things on this site you're going to really enjoy. And we'll go down to the shack and we'll talk about the code and various aspects of amateur radio.
Okay, well, thanks for doing this. Thanks for being on here and welcoming us. Jane is WA4JXJ, and hence the nickname JXJ. And yeah, she's a special person in my life, that's for sure. Anyway, thanks again, and I've enjoyed it.
All right, one more question if there is one. Anyone have a question for Dennis?
I don't have a question, but I have a statement. Dennis and Joanne are probably the most down-to-earth people I have ever met, and thank you for adopting me. I love you, Dennis and Joanne.
I love you too, Rose. Yeah, well, we met Rose and we met Steve and Hallie and probably 20 other people in May. We hosted a little birthday party for Mr. Steve. Got him out here in California to Santa Barbara. And we had a one long week party. And that was a lot of fun, huh, Steve?
Oh, that was such an awesome, awesome time, boy. Yep, I've shaked Dennis's hand. I've seen his mobility skills. He's kind of crazy, actually, to tell you the truth. But he gets around incredibly well. And got to shake the hands and hug a lot of people on the site that did show up. And it was an awesome, awesome time, awesome memory. Couldn't have been possible without Dennis and Joanne and Chuck W., I must say. That was an awesome time. Thanks, everyone. I've enjoyed the interview. Thank you, Dennis. And I guess it's over. I'll turn it back over, well, to Hallie.
Yes, I just want to say, Dennis, that was a great interview. Thank you for doing the interview on such short notice. You're a trooper, and you came through for us, and I do appreciate it, as I know, you know, everyone in here does. They got to listen to you talk about your experiences, and you've had many, many, many. And we did have a great time in California. And so once again, thank you for being here. And join us in 2 weeks for another spotlight. Somebody else, some other FTP member will be in the spotlight. So join us then. My show, Hallie's Honky Tonk Heaven, is coming up in just a little while, so don't forget that. Followed by Tiffany's show, Monsters Musicals. She does musicals from the big screen and the stage. And then at 7 we have the FTP movie, followed by Lynn's K Cabaret, Peeps Cabaret at 9. So if you are a talented person, if you do read poetry or play an instrument or anything of that nature, anything in between, if you can tell a story good or whatever, go in there and show Miss Lynn and all the other participants what you can do. So we have a great evening of entertainment coming up here on FTP, and we hope that you will take advantage of it. So thank you once again for being here, everybody. And Dennis, thank you for agreeing to be interviewed today.
Well, thank you, Steve and Hallie. I did enjoy it, and it was a lot of fun. And thanks to Jennifer for managing the site here. And everybody else, have a good afternoon and enjoy the site. Play all the games, listen to all the entertainment, and everybody will have a good time. 7-3 to the Hams, and bye to everyone else, and have a good afternoon.